Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sometimes great truths can be summed up in simple phrases, and that includes the old adage, you are what you eat. Scientists are continually discovering connections between our diets and our health, and this is especially true in very recent years with our brains. Joining us this hour to talk about how diet can impact the health of our brains is Dr. Neil Barnard. He is the founder and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He is also an adjunct associate professor of medicine at George Washington University, and he has written several best-selling books on eating well for life and health. We've talked about a few of them on All Sides in the past. His newest book is Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Welcome to the show, Dr. Barnard.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Let's talk about first about why you and so many other scientists who study these issues believe it's more important than ever. What do we know about the brain now that we didn't know even 5 years ago?
Well, the first thing that we didn't know is how bad things are going to be. 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's right now, and all the projections are that is going to probably triple by the year 2050. People who look at healthcare expenditures are in a panic about this because it's expensive to have medical care in really the best of circumstances. But when people have Alzheimer's disease, the average person today in residential care costs about $70,000 per person per year. You multiply that by 15 million people, and you accelerate that by the fact that the dollar is going to be in a very different buying capacity in the future. It's going to be financially a catastrophe. But what is more important is the personal catastrophe. And I've seen this in my own family. When my father became demented, all four of my grandparents, you would do anything to not have this happen, because year after year after year, just everything that ever mattered to the person is torn away. They don't even know their own loved ones. They can't do anything that they enjoyed, and yet you're living year after year after year. So personally, it's terrible. Financially, it's catastrophic. And the good news, in the face of all that terrible news, there is good news. And that is the research showing the risk factors for it that we can actually control and change. The research on this has finally matured so that in exactly the same way as a generation ago, we learned that you can cut your risk of heart disease with certain simple steps. We now believe that you can protect the brain using very simple steps, and many of them are actually very similar to the ones used for the heart. So that's a long-winded answer, but that's where we are right now.
Are we just talking about Alzheimer's per se, or are there other iterations of dementia that would also benefit from this three-step program that we're going to talk about?
Alzheimer's is the one that has gotten people's attention the most, because nearly half of Americans get this disease by age 85. It's the most common form of dementia, but there are others. So we start with lapses. You might be 25 years old, but your memory can misfire. The usual reason is lack of sleep or too much stress or something like that. Then later in life, midlife, we get more frequent, a little bit of mental fuzziness. And then a condition comes up called mild cognitive impairment, or MCI. Mild cognitive impairment means you're still yourself. You can still joke and laugh and drive and manage your checkbook. But you notice lapses that are really frequent. What was the name of that actor? What movie was he in? You know, you're having trouble on sort of a daily basis. And then Alzheimer's disease means you've got all of that, plus your language is starting to go, your personality is being eroded, your ability to draw things in space, your spatial orientation is gone. All of these things mean Alzheimer's. But there are other forms of dementia, too, that can be vascular, meaning your blood vessels are disrupted in one way or another. So all of these relate to food and lifestyle changes.
You know, when you're describing some of those warning signs, it makes me think about people who have really super, super busy lives. They're overloaded. They're over, they're working too much. They're very intellectually stimulated people. And I often say that everybody looks familiar and I can't remember anybody's name is part of my problem. How do you tease out what's just this the nature of our society now where we're not taking breaks, we're not, we're just working so much more than we used to?
Well, the one thing that happens with almost everybody is sleep deprivation. And sleep is so important because that's what allows us to integrate our memories. And if you are losing even a little bit of sleep, let's say 10 o'clock is your normal sleep time. Tonight you stay up till 11. Mm-hmm. Your brain has lost an hour of filing time when it was going to file away the experiences of the day. And your memory will be noticeably worse tomorrow. And many, many people burn their candle at both ends. But the issue also is while you were awake, what were you doing? So not only are you depriving yourself of sleep, that's when people tend to raid the refrigerator. And the next day when you're sleep deprived, if you're really sleep deprived, people will eat anything just to get through the day. The people who are eating healthfully are usually people who are really well rested and have the energy to do it. If you're just dragging through the day, it's black coffee and whatever else you can shovel down to get going. So all of these things work together, sleep deprivation plus a bad diet.
I'm talking with Dr. Neil Barnard about his new book. It's called Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Let's talk about some of those foods, the power foods that are mentioned in the three steps. Or it's the first of the three steps is what you eat.
And this really goes back in 1906, Dr. Alzheimer himself, Alois Alzheimer, looked in the brain of a person who had died with dementia. And dementia is just a general term. It means your cognition is not what it used to be. And he said, there's something in this brain. He looked at it under the microscope. He found plaques, which we now know are called amyloid plaques. And amyloid protein oozes out of the brain cells, just like sausage coming out of a sausage maker. It's these protein strands come out of the brain cells. They accumulate in little, they look like little balls of yarn or little meatballs in between the brain cells. And Dr. Alzheimer also said there's something inside the brain cells. He called, well, today we refer to them as neurofibrillary tangles. What you have to know is that these are proteins that have become all tangled up and they don't have their normal orientation. Between the plaques and the tangles, the brain cells are destroyed, bit by bit by bit by bit. And that was the end of the story until recent years when researchers started to say, wait a minute, for certain people who are eating in a certain way, that does not happen. So it happens much, much less. So the people who tend to avoid what are called saturated fats, that's animal fats, dairy products are the biggest source of the bad fats, meat is right behind it. So people who tend to avoid meat and dairy products and they avoid the saturated fats, they get their risk of Alzheimer's can be cut by as much as 60 or 70%. Then the next thing, people who avoid the trans fats, which are in donuts or in French fries, onion rings sometimes, the people who avoid the trans fats, their risk of Alzheimer's was cut by as much as 80%. So it's not a question of do I avoid the cheese or do I avoid the trans fats. The answer is avoid them both. And it's good for your heart, it's good for your waistline, it's also good for your brain. So there's much more to it, but that's the place to start.
If you've already started to develop Alzheimer's, by changing your diet, can you retard it or can you turn it around?
That is the $64,000 question. Hmm. And I do believe my answer to that is yes, up to a point. There is a point where I believe you cannot go backwards. Once the brain cells are gone, those brain cells are gone.
Okay.
The brain has better regenerative capacities than we had thought it does. But there are, even in the best of circumstances, there are very severe limitations. Now, having said that, there have been a number of studies that have brought in people with what's called mild cognitive impairment. Their memory is showing those first signs. And most researchers believe this is the beginnings of Alzheimer's disease. They take those people. they make dietary adjustments. One of the quickest was at the University of Cincinnati. They brought in people, average age 78. Everybody had mild cognitive impairment. The intervention was 2 cups of grape juice, Concord grape juice. That was the whole thing. 12 weeks later, they discovered their memory was noticeably better. Why? The anthocyanins, which protect the grapes, as well as giving them that deep purple color, they are powerful antioxidants, and they showed they could reverse this process in about 12 weeks' time. The hypothesis that it was the anthocyanins, by the way, led them to test other anthocyanin-containing fruits, mm-hmm. like blueberries, and they have exactly the same effect. So this suggests that maybe there are a number of other steps that people can take. But yes, I think the short answer is if you catch this early, I think there are some steps that a person can and should take.
And is the impact they're having, is that mean, are they dissembling those little plaque meatballs you're talking about? Is that what they're going after?
That's our goal. But the kind of study that needs to be done really has not been done. And I am eager to do this. We have done this with other diseases. We bring in people who already have full-blown diabetes, type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
They have a high blood sugar. They've got symptoms. And I bring them into to my laboratory, and I pull out all the stops. They're going to go on a vegan diet, no animal products whatsoever. We're going to keep the oils low, totally healthy. And we have seen this disease turn around just dramatically. That kind of research has not yet been done with Alzheimer's. What has been done is, for the most part, large population studies, where you bring in thousands of people and you identify which foods they were eating when they were healthy, and then you see who has succumbed to the disease. And there we have a lot of leads. This is the saturated fat and the trans fats that are harmful. Vitamin E turns out to be quite helpful. People who are eating vitamin E-rich foods have dramatically less risk of Alzheimer's. So we need to do these intervention trials that we've been talking about.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. More of this conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard still to come. But first, Rob Walker and Dana Vieta are here to tell you why you should support 89.7 NPR News.
And we are listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is our Spring Fund Drive. I'm Dana Vieta. We're here today to raise money in support of the programs you enjoy on 89.7 NPR News. Please call right now with your gift, 1-866-897-9678. The amount is up to you. We appreciate every single pledge because every dollar you can give does make a difference. 1-866-897-9678. With more information on how you can help, here's Rob Walker.
Well, thanks, Dana. And again, the number to call is 1-866-897-9678. And when you call and give a $100 gift or more to 89.7 NPR News, we'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thanks, Dr. Barnard's latest book, Power Foods for the Brain. You'll learn a lot of great information in this book, and you're learning a lot right now with Dr. Barnard. Well, this book really is a complimentary piece to what you're listening to on All Sides with Ann Fisher. $100 pledge will send you Power Foods for the Brain. In this book, Dr. Barnard lays out 3 simple steps to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. That's our gift to you when you support us at the $100 level or more at 1-866-897-9678 or visit us online at WOSU.org.
And what are you passionate about? What are your hobbies? Well, 89.7 NPR News has you covered. You learn about a new author with an interesting story to tell on All Sides with Ann Fisher. You hear about great places to eat in Columbus during All Sides weekend. You discover new music from up-and-coming artists. You hear about an outdoor adventure in Ohio or perhaps a cross-country trip. 89.7 NPR News brings you the stories and programming that connect your passions to the world around you. Join us today and become a member right now. Who knows what new passion you might find on 89.7 NPR News. Become a member today by calling 1-866-897-9678 or visit us online at WOSU.org.
Did you ever think about becoming a sustaining member of 89.7 NPR News? A sustainer is somebody who gives a fixed amount monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, annually, but we automatically renew it in a 12-month cycle. So if you decide to give, say, $10 a month, you'll always see $10 a month on your credit card until you ask us to either increase, decrease, or stop altogether. So this is our way of making it convenient for you. Think about a $10 a month commitment. With that, you can also get the very special thank you gift we're offering this hour, and that's Dr. Bernard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain, at the $100 level. Our gift to you as a way of saying thank you for becoming a sustainer and for supporting 89.7 NPR News. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
And you get the opportunity to hear about new authors, new historians, new things on all sides with Ann Fisher when you listen, as well as the latest news stories. Ann also talks about local food and local arts. Every Tuesday, you get to hear Tech Tuesday on all sides, where Ann talks about the latest technology and gadgets. And on Wednesdays each week, you get to hear Wellness Wednesday, some of the great reasons why you should call and make your support, make a contribution to 89.7 NPR News. If these types of discussions are important to you, then now is the time to make a pledge of support. Call right now the number 1-866-897-9678 or give online at WOSU.org.
And once again, when you contribute at the $100 level or more, we will be happy to send to you, as our way of saying thanks, Dr. Bernard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. This book can help you learn the steps to protect your memory, prevent Alzheimer's, and enhance your cognitive skills. This is our gift to you for a $100 gift or more at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. Call or go online right now.
You know, the world we live in is more complex than ever, and so are the issues facing our country right now. That's probably why you're listening to 89.7 NPR News right now. It's why we're asking you to make a contribution to 89.7 NPR News. Every dollar you give helps pay for the news and analysis that keeps you informed. Please take 2 minutes right now to ensure that you have quality news coverage in the coming year. Give online at WOSU.org or call us with your support, 1-866-897-9678.
And in just a few seconds, we'll return to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Her guest today is Dr. Neil Bernard. And don't forget that as your gift for a $100 pledge or more, we'll be happy to offer you Power Foods for the Brain, Dr. Bernard's latest book, 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Dr. Neil Bernard. He is the author of many best-selling books on health and food. The one we're talking about today is his latest. It's called Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Dr. Bernard, we've talked about power foods. Can we get a little bit more specific what should we be eating?
Yes. Well, what we should eat is everything that I didn't eat as a child growing up in Fargo, North Dakota. I have to say, I grew up not only with kind of the cattle ranching sort of view of the world, but also this coincided in time with what you might call the fast food revolution, except that it's been really a disaster. So it was burgers and chicken nuggets and that kind of thing. The foods that have the bad fats are meats and dairy products, and many countries, most of the world, does not have these as their staples. So the healthy food groups that really ought to be our daily staples are vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans. Now, that doesn't really sound like a meal. Those are more ingredients. So what would meals look like? If you start your day with blueberry pancakes or a bowl of oatmeal with cinnamon and raisins and some strawberries on top, that would be perfectly fine. If you're having sausage, instead of the meat sausage, have the veggie sausage. The technology has ramped up, and they're good, and there's zero saturated fat in them, zero of the bad fat. For lunch, if you're stopping at the submarine sandwich place, you can leave off the meat and cheese, but have lettuce, tomato, cucumber, spinach, olives, hot peppers, red wine vinegar. They'll toast it for you. Perfectly fine. So the idea is to try to see which foods you can have that skip the bad fats. Thinking international is a good idea. So Chinese restaurants, Japanese, Thai, Italian, Mexican places are happy to make you a bean burrito. You'll find most of these cuisines will bring you these four healthy food groups: vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans. The idea is to emphasize those, partly to get away from the bad fats, but partly because the vegetables and fruits are vitamin rich, and those will protect the brain as well.
But you got to avoid the add-ons too, because when you go to an Italian restaurant, they're usually running around with a pepper grinder, but also a cheese grinder.
Oh, they do. Yeah, exactly. And saying no is a very good thing. You know, any kind of cuisine has its good and its bad. So I was actually at an Italian restaurant last night, and I was with a large group of people. And I have to say that the way to do this, I really think, is you get first of all, pasta is perfectly fine. The issue is what goes on it. So if it's the ground beef sauce or the cheese sauce or the creamy Alfredo, no good. You could send that to a laboratory, and they are going to send you back the most frightening report about what it'll do to your cholesterol, waistline, and Alzheimer's risk. On the other hand, you can have artichoke hearts and wild oyster mushrooms and chunky tomatoes and a little spice, and that's all to the good. So there is nothing that says you can't have a nice meal, but you want to make some good choices. I might also, let me say a word for sprinkling a few sesame seeds on your salad. Seeds and nuts have vitamin E. You could get vitamin E from a store. Fine. Yeah, in the vitamin E pill, there's only one form of it, or maybe two. But these seeds and nuts have it in several different forms that make them natural antioxidants. They protect the brain. And in the Chicago Health and Aging Project, they could show that people who got the most food-derived vitamin E had 25 to 70% less Alzheimer's risk compared to other people. Now, the problem we run into is nuts are a little addicting. So that's why I say, don't just shove them in your mouth. Sprinkle them on your salad. And that way, you won't overdo it. Walnuts, pecans, almonds, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, all of them have the natural vitamin E.
And then step two of the three steps involves exercise, but it's exercise for the brain. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, and before we get into that, there's one point I really want to emphasize. I can imagine that some listeners are thinking, well, that might work for other people, but I think I probably have genetic risk.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that. Can this impact people with genetic history?
Yes. Genes are in two different categories. I call some the dictator genes, the genes for eye color. Mm-hmm. You can't argue. If they say blue eyes, you're going to have it. Those genes give orders we follow. But most genes are not dictators. They are committees. So the genes, there is a gene that increases the risk of Alzheimer's disease. It's called the APOE epsilon 4 allele. If you get it from one parent, your risk is increased threefold. If you get it from both parents, you're at 10 to 15 times the risk. But the reason I say that this gene is not a dictator is that some people have the gene and they don't get the disease. And what seems to happen is if you dramatically reduce the risk of these bad fats, there was a huge study in Finland, more than 1,000 people, those who avoided the bad fats, even if they had the gene, had a dramatically reduced risk, roughly 80% reduced risk of developing memory problems in later life, which raises the question of why. You know, if you got the gene, how could you not get the effect? Mm-hmm. Well, we've teased out what this gene does. The APOE epsilon 4 allele does not give you Alzheimer's. What it does is it makes a protein that escorts cholesterol from place to place, and that in turn can, in the brain, can lead to Alzheimer's. What if I'm avoiding the bad fats and I am therefore not making extra cholesterol? The idea is we're effectively giving that gene nothing to do. And so there are many, many ways that we can affect whether genes will be active or inactive. And these genes are, most of these genes, the genes for diabetes, certain forms of cancer, are not dictators. You can argue with them and you could say, no, thank you. I don't want diabetes, I don't want Alzheimer's disease, and I'm going to make sure that the gene is inactive by making certain diet choices. So it's remarkable. When I was in medical school, we thought genes were all there was to it. We now know that we have what we call epigenetic control that turns the gene on or turns the gene off in many, many cases.
I guess before we move on to the exercise for the brain, I'd also like to bring up the issue that of this epidemic of childhood obesity we have in the United States. Are these kids going to be, when they're having these kind of problems at such young ages, is that going to affect their ability to turn things around later in life? I mean, there's one thing to have, you know, otherwise, you know, decently healthy adult who's done okay, eliminate a lot of meats and so forth from their diet to start to follow some of these rules. But if a kid's been doing this, if they've been doing it since they were children, what then?
Children today have the worst diet of any generation in the history of our country, and probably related to the entire planet. The school nutrition programs are a political football, and there are plenty of physicians like me who say, why are kids being given sausage and bacon for breakfast in school, and why is there pepperoni pizza every day? And if you add up the, we were talking earlier about saturated fat being the bad fat for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the government sets standards for saturated fat content of school lunches, and 70% of schools violate those standards now. And when we march down to Congress, we say, you can't be feeding kids this way. Within 5 minutes, every food lobbyist is on the phone to them saying, don't change anything. We're making a lot of money doing this. Here's the problem. By the time kids get their high school diploma, many of them have the beginnings of heart disease. You can look in the coronary arteries and you will see it. A third of kids are already overweight. Many kids are starting to develop the beginnings of type 2 diabetes, and right now 100 million Americans have either diabetes or prediabetes. What does this mean for the brain? An overweight kid is very likely to be an overweight adult, and that greatly increases the risk of not just heart problems, but also Alzheimer's disease specifically. The risk of diabetes, a person who has diabetes, which 1 in 3 kids is going to get as an adult, diabetes doubles your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. We have a disaster in the making, and that is why we are banging the drum so loudly to say kids need to understand, and they need to, not just how foods affect the brain, but what they taste like and how to make them enjoyable, so that if we're serving, instead of the greasy burger, why not a bowl of vegetarian chili? It's good, but if it's alien to a child, we have to change that so that they like the taste and it becomes their norm. Because there is no reason why the next generation couldn't be the slimmest, healthiest, longest-lived generation we've ever had. But we are not on that path. We are not even close to it.
Food addiction is something that you discuss in the book. It's a really serious problem. How does that play into your challenge?
You know, it's a fascinating area. I was doing a study for the National Institutes of Health. 2003, they asked us to test certain diets for diabetes. And the diet that won out, that was the most effective for diabetes, was a plant-based diet, a vegan diet. In other words, no cheese, no meat at all. And in the course of this study, people lost weight and their cholesterol fell and their diabetes improved dramatically. But a number of the patients would say to me, you know, I really miss cheese. And I know it's so fatty, I know it's bad for me, but I really miss cheese. And you think, why is that? It smells like old socks. What, you know, why do people do? Why do they get hooked on cheese? So we started teasing it apart and we found out why. That the dairy protein, which is called casein, C-A-S-E-I-N, digests in the digestive tract to release very mild opiates that are called casomorphins, casein-derived morphine-like compounds that pass into the bloodstream attached to the very same receptors in the brain called mu receptors, the same receptors that any opiate would attach to. And we believe that they are there because the cow, in producing milk, also produces a little bit of a feel-good in the protein that sort of reassures the calf and makes the calf bond to the mother. I know we like to think of the mother-infant bond as being all related to body warmth and proximity, but I have to say some of it is biological. So cheese is very tightly packed with casein, and so it's these opiates that seem to do it. Now, strawberries don't have any of that, so people like strawberries, but they don't ever binge on them.
Yeah.
And only certain foods are addicting, and most others are not.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. More of my conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard, author of Power Foods for the Brain, is still to come. But first, here's Rob Walker and Dana Vieta to tell you about our thank you gift for this hour and to talk about why you should support 89.7 NPR News right now.
And this is the 89.7 NPR News Spring Fun Drive. I'm Dana Vieta. You know, you get a lot out of 89.7 NPR News no matter when you listen. Today we're asking you to put something back in, a financial contribution. That's right, we count on listener contributions to pay for just about everything we do. Your gift right now keeps the programs you value, programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher, on the air, and it will help to make this fun drive a success. Call with your contribution right now, 1-866-897-9678, or give online at WOSU.org. Joining me right now is Rob Walker.
Well, thanks, Dana. And again, the number to call is 1-866-897-9678, or at WOSU.org. If you're enjoying Ann's Hour, Dr. Neil Bernard, we have a very special thank you gift we're offering right now. When you contribute at the $100 level or more, we'll be able to offer you his book, Power Foods for the Brain by Dr. Neil Bernard. You're learning a lot of great information this hour with Dr. Bernard, and you can pick up some more information or complimentary information with his latest book. Dr. Bernard lays out three simple steps to protect the mind and strengthen the memory. This is our thank you gift to you for a $100 gift to WOSU at 1-866-897-9678. But hurry, we only have about 20 minutes remaining in All Sides with Ann Fisher, and that's about 20 minutes remaining for you to call and support WOSU and get this book. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Some of the big questions that we're asking this spring are, will Congress and the President reach a grand bargain on taxes and spending? Will Ohio's economic recovery continue? Who will run the Columbus City schools? These are all important questions, and public radio is the place where you turn to find the answers. Each day, seasoned reporters like 89.7's Tom Borgerdin and Mandy Trimble and correspondents from NPR are covering Columbus and the world. 89.7 NPR News plays an important role in helping you understand the world around you. And you play an important role in the financial health of this station. So make that call right now with your pledge, 1-866-897-9678, or give online at WOSU.org.
We make it easy and simple for you to support 89.7 NPR News. Just call our volunteers or our operators. Go online at WOSU.org. We ask for some very basic information. We can tell you with absolute certainty that your information is confidential. We do not share anything with anybody. It all stays right here at WOSU. But we do need to hear from you right now at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. And don't forget, when you contribute $100 this hour, we'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thanks, Power Foods for the Brain by Dr. Neil Bernard, Ann's guest today. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's a two-hour daily call-in talk show. This show is unique to 89.7 NPR News. You're not going to find a show like All Sides with Ann Fisher anywhere else on your radio dial. Civil conversations about state politics, issues at Columbus City Hall, events happening around Ohio. If a two-hour local call-in talk show is valuable to you as a listener, then we need you to support that with a pledge in whatever amount fits your budget. Visit WOSU.org to give or call us right now at 1-866-897-9678.
Or visit us again at WOSU.org. Just about a minute to go before we get back to All Sides with Ann Fisher here in 89.7 NPR News. And again, when you contribute $100 or more, our gift to you is Dr. Bernard's latest book, The Power Foods for the Brain. There are about 75 power food recipes in this book developed by experienced chefs. Learn how to make brain-boosting foods such as blueberry buckwheat pancakes, creamy pumpkin bisque. There are recipes for salad dressings, soups, stews, and even desserts. Make a brain-healthy risotto primavera for dinner and have a warm apple cherry compote for dessert. These are in this book along with information on how to prevent Alzheimer's, protect your memory, and enhance your cognitive skills. The number to call is 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
And if you've never given before, please know that 89.7 NPR News is here because someone else took that first step from being a listener to being a listener contributor. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week to become a new member. So please call us right now at 1-866-897-9678 or give online at WOSU.org.
And one last opportunity for you to give $100, and we'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thanks, Power Food for the Brain, Dr. Bernard's latest book at the $100 gift level. 1-866-897-9678. 877-967-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Dr. Neil Barnard. We're talking about his newest book, Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. So let's get to that second step, exercise for the brain, Dr. Barnard. What are we talking about, crossword puzzles or something a little bit different?
Well, we're talking about two different things. One is physical exercise, and the other is crossword puzzles and anything that keeps your brain active. And looking at the brain exercise part of things, people have learned that, or researchers have learned, that individuals who are really not using their reasoning ability, their problem-solving ability, people who are not using their memory function of having to remember things, in the same way as muscles that aren't used start to atrophy or the bones that are inactive tend to lose their structure, those brain structures tend to atrophy as well, which is a bit shocking. So it doesn't mean that you have to be enrolled in a PhD program and struggling through things intellectually day by day, but it does mean that we should be watching documentaries, listening to programs like this, doing crossword puzzles, doing things that keep the brain active. At the same time, if you do only those things and you're eating all the bad foods, you really cannot you don't want to do one in isolation. You really want to do everything that you can, because my example of this is my father. My father grew up on a cattle ranch, which he hated the cattle business. He left it. He went to medical school. He studied a great deal. He had a very active intellectual life. He read the New England Journal with every issue and so forth. But he still ate like he was in the cattle business. And if you have this tsunami of saturated fat coming into your bloodstream, it's going to wash away the brain connections that you have built up through intellectual exercise. So yes, you do need to exercise the brain, and you do it along with the other healthy lifestyle steps.
And physical exercise as well.
Yes. A number of studies have looked at this. And physical exercise, what does it do? I don't mean lifting weights here. The goal here is not to build muscles or to necessarily do yoga or stretching. Those all have benefits, but the benefits are in a different direction. The goal here is to get your pulse elevated, because that will oxygenate the structures of the brain. You know, the brain is maybe 3% of your body weight, but it gets about 20% of your blood flow. So the brain, I always say, is the heart's favorite organ. It's sending as much blood as it can up to the brain. If you are physically active, that only increases, and you get the oxygen into the brain, you get nutrients into the brain, and just as importantly, you're getting the waste products out of the brain. So researchers have asked people to exercise, and exercisers not only have better memory function that you can clearly demonstrate, but physically on MRI scans, magnetic resonance scanning, you can see that the parts of the brain that are involved in memory physically, they increase in size, and whereas for other people, while they age, they gradually atrophy and deteriorate. So the kind of exercise that works is a brisk walk three times a week, go 40 minutes three times a week, or whatever you can do. If you can do more, that's good. But about three times a week, 40 minutes is what you need.
And then there's my favorite part of the three-step outline, sleep. Preferably without a medication involved.
Yes. Sleep is so critical to this. And for a couple of reasons. One is, when you're unconscious, you can't reach for a donut. So sleep is good in that way. It says, okay, whatever we've been doing bad in the day, we're going to stop now. But sleep is more than that. When you hook up in a laboratory setting, you hook up a research participant to an electroencephalograph, and you take a reading. What you discover is that the reading will change. As a person drifts off into sleep, something emerges on your tracing. It's called slow wave sleep. And the EEG leads clearly show that something is going on in the brain. What's happening? What's happening is that the brain is integrating the memories of things that have occurred during the day, especially words and experiences. So the jumble of things that happen during the day are filed away at night, particularly in the beginning of the night. And so if you stayed up till 11:30 or 12, the brain is losing its filing time. The second half of the night, things start to shift. REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, starts to predominate. That's when the brain is integrating emotions and also physical skills. So a kid learning to ride a bike, in the second half of the night, these physical skills start to be integrated. Playing a guitar, playing any kind of your tennis game, the physical skills are integrated, along with emotional control. All right. Stay up all night. You're a tax accountant. It's April 14th. You're up all night. The next day, two things happen. One is you can't remember anything because you missed out on slow wave sleep. The second thing is because you missed REM sleep, your emotional control is bad. You'll be grumpy. You'll be a little giddy. You do not have the emotional control. So think about kids. Six-year-old kid goes to sleep at 8 o'clock. They sleep till 7 in the morning. They had 11 hours of sleep. They were comatose the whole night. They wake up refreshed. They are jumping around. Their emotional control is better than it is if they are up all night, and their ability to remember, you know, they're going to be sharp as a tack. So we should take that lesson and try to put it to work in adulthood.
And preferably without medications, but there are some foods that naturally produce what is known as serotonin, which can help you sleep.
Yeah, that's right. Now, for most people, your brain will take care of this automatically, but if you are having a little insomnia, there are foods that produce serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter that communicates from one cell to the next many different things that the cells should be doing, one of which is to calm down and go to sleep. The foods that do that, surprisingly enough, are carbohydrates. And here's how this works. It's a chain of events. I eat some starch. Could be potatoes. Could be bread. What that does is it increases my blood sugar fairly quickly. The increase in blood sugar in turn causes the body to make insulin, and the insulin stores away the blood sugar. But insulin has one other function that many people are not aware of, and that is it also takes protein building blocks called amino acids from the bloodstream, and it takes them out of the blood into the cells. And that is critical for the brain. Here's why. One of these amino acids, one of these protein building blocks that is in the bloodstream is called tryptophan, and that will make the serotonin in the brain. But it cannot do it if there are so many competing amino acids in the bloodstream. It just can't get through the blood-brain barrier into the brain. So I have my bread or my potatoes. The blood sugar rises. The insulin comes out. It takes those competing amino acids out of the blood. The tryptophan is there. It then has a main line straight into the brain. It makes the serotonin, and you go to sleep. Here's where I put this to work. It's 3 in the morning. You got a lot of work worries, and you are awake. Go to the refrigerator, eat 2 slices of bread, go to sleep, and go back to bed, and you'll find you doze right off in a matter of minutes. Works very, very, very easily.
Does it keep you dozed off, though? I mean, how long does something like that last?
Well, you'll still wake up.
Uh-huh.
Which by the way, is the beauty of it. You know, so many people, they're up at 11:30, 12, 1 o'clock thinking, do I dare take a sleeping pill?
Right.
Because I don't want to be groggy the next day.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it with food, you're going to be fine. And by the way, you can do the reverse of this. Let's say I get up in the morning and I want to be alert. Now have a higher protein food. So, and by the way, a higher protein food should not be eggs, bacon, sausage, because those foods, which are sort of the American breakfast staples, give us loads of cholesterol and fat that increase the risk of brain problems down the road. What should I have instead? If you're going to have sausage, have the veggie sausage or veggie bacon or something like that. What almost every other culture has as their cultural norms, they have various kinds of beans for breakfast. In England, baked beans are a breakfast food, same in Australia. In Middle Eastern countries, hummus made from chickpeas is a high-protein food. Americans tend not to have protein foods in the morning unless they're animal-derived. But if you're having one of these healthier forms of protein, whether it's soy sausage or beans or something like that, then you get the protein that provides the amino acids that compete with tryptophan and keep it from going to the brain when you want to be alert instead of being asleep. So carbohydrates turn your brain off a little bit, make you sleep. The proteins will keep you alert.
I don't think we've mentioned the 75 recipes that are included in the book. They're developed by Christine Waltermeyer and Jason Weiwerk. Can you tell us what made the cut? What you wanted in the book in terms of the recipes and what people can find there?
Oh, well, yeah, thank you. This is a lot of fun because Christine and Jason are great chefs, and they're different. Christine is more straight-ahead, sort of familiar foods, and Jason is too, but he's from Phoenix, and there you'll see spicy things in what Jason does. So I said, I want foods that are familiar, like spaghetti or burritos or things like that, but I want to get the bad fats out and plug in the foods that are protective to the brain. So sweet potatoes, for example, which are interestingly enough, the staple food of Okinawa, sweet potatoes are. They really are. This is the place where people live to be 100 more frequently than just about anywhere on Earth. So we have sweet potato burritos they happen to have none of the cheese and meat that would pack in the saturated fat, but frankly, they're quite flavorful and delicious. Or everybody likes pizza. It's fun. It's party food. But good heavens, between the cheese and the pepperoni, it's enough to sink a ship, the saturated fat. So we've made English muffin pizzas that happen to be all vegetable. They have vegetable toppings that are really, it's delicious, it's fun, kids like them, but everything in them is good for you. So we've got soups and salads, and main dishes and toppings and sauces and even plenty of desserts, but you won't find a scrap. There are no animal products in there. Everything is vegan. Everything is low in fat, but everything is appealing, delicious, familiar, relatively few ingredients as well.
Dr. Barnard, I want to thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been fun talking with you today.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Once again, thanks to Dr. Neil Barnard for joining us today to talk about his new book, Power Foods for the Brain. And now with more information on how you can support our station during our spring membership drive, here's Rob Walker and Dana Vieta.